some of us specifically choose a certain breed of dog because we think they're not going to shed, or we think they're not going to need much grooming. We think they have hair as opposed to fur, or we decide that short hair is the only way to go. In fact, we all need to pay attention to the grooming of our dogs if we're going to be responsible pet owners. And our topic today on Good Dog is just that. Welcome to the Good Dog Podcast. I'm Joanne Green, and my guest today is Daryl Connor, who is not only a groomer, but teaches other groomers how to do their jobs better. Is that fair to say, Daryl?
I would say that's quite fair.
And you have a lovely website, which I understand is going to be improved even more in the near future. But on there you have a number of articles of interest both to pet owners and as well to groomers. And so we will give out that website address now and then again later on in the show. It's darylconnor.com, and it's spelled darylconnor.com. So how does one become a groomer? You mentioned earlier that you've been cutting dogs' hair since you were a little girl.
Well, not quite a little girl, but since I was pretty young, I've always had a total and complete passion for dogs. And when I was a teenager, I got my first dog, which was a Cocker Spaniel. And I loved him so passionately, I could not bear to leave him in the hands of a pet groomer. So I learned how to groom him myself. And from there, I started a career, which I've been happily scissoring and snipping and washing for almost 25 years.
Well, I can totally understand the passion for dogs, no question about that. You see a wide range of animals, and some, I'm sure, are more cooperative than others on your table, right?
This is true.
So are there techniques that you employ for getting dogs to stand still or sit still when you're grooming?
Sure, there absolutely are. But the biggest thing, I think, is that dogs read us very clearly. And when I was a new groomer, even though I had most of my techniques down fairly comfortably, the dogs gave me a really hard time because they knew that I wasn't very sure of myself. And as I became more confident, the dogs just started behaving better.
This is true for parenting as well, isn't it?
I think it is.
There is so much about owning a pet and training a pet that really relates to the care and feeding of a child.
Yes.
So
I was a good mom because I had had a lot of practice with my dogs first.
There you go. Let's start out by debunking some myths. First
okay.
of all, are there some dogs, mine in particular, who have hair and not fur, or is it all fur?
It's all fur. I hate to tell people, and I know people are going to hate to hear it, but I've done a little bit of research. And basically the two terms came about when we used to harvest fur for animal, for fur coats and things. And so animals that had a pelt that was desirable to be used in clothing tended to be called fur-bearing mammals. And that is sort of where people started differentiating between fur and hair.
And so what is the difference between what so many of us mistakenly call hair on, for instance, my little peek-a-poo here, my cockapoo before that, poodles, all the different poodle mixes, and what you see on the animals who shed more?
Well, what I think is that people think that hair doesn't shed, but if you've ever had a wad of hair in your shower drain after you've washed your hair, and you call the hair on your hair hair, the hair on your head hair, we do shed too. All mammals that grow hair, the hair has a life cycle. It starts out from the follicle, it grows a certain predestined amount of time, and then it falls out. And that is true on dogs, cats, people, everything.
But some dogs shed more than others.
Some dogs do shed more than others. Let me give you an example. I have black pugs, and I tend to like white sheets. It's a bad combination because my pugs shed a lot.
Silly you.
Yes, it is silly. Now, a friend of mine has a Lhasa Apso, and her dog sheds very little because a Lhasa Apso's hair is destined to grow several inches, which takes a long time. So the hair sheds at a very slow rate.
Wait, you're calling it hair now. I'm confused.
It's hair, fur, it's all sort of the same.
I see. So it's just a matter of how quickly it grows and how much it sheds.
Yeah, but technically, if you look it up, it will say that generally fur and hair, it's all the same thing on mammals.
Very, very interesting. Now, what about allergies and shedding?
Allergies and shedding. Most people, from what I have ascertained, are allergic not so much to the hair, but to the dander, saliva, and even urine residue in the pet's coat.
Urine on their coat?
Yes, because they pee and there's hair.
There you go. So yep. When you say the dander and the saliva and potentially the urine. It could be just one of those three.
It could be one of those three or perhaps all of them.
I see. So, for instance, if you bathe your dog frequently and all you're allergic to is the urine residue, you're going to really minimize that.
Yes, and also if your pet is out running through the pucker brush and bringing home lots of pollen and things, they're going to be bringing in allergens on their coat. So they could actually be running in an allergen-rich environment. It could be more the environment than the pet itself.
But I think some significant percentage of us, and I think I'm included in there, react to the dander. I know this only because I react to some dogs more than others and to cats way more than dogs.
Yes,
and cats have more dander?
Cats, most dermatologists will tell you that people who are allergic to cats are more allergic to something in their saliva. And since cats self-groom a lot, they have a lot of saliva on their coat.
Very interesting. So what can you do about that? Not much, right?
Well, you can bathe them more. And I actually recently found out there is a breed of cat that is allergen-free.
Get out.
Get out. And I wish I could remember what it was. I want to say it was a Norwegian something, but...
Do they have hair?
They do have hair, but they lack a certain genetic component that most people are not allergic to them.
Very interesting. And I know you're not an allergist, so I probably shouldn't be asking you this question, but in general, are these the sorts of allergies from your experience that people can outgrow or can become somewhat immune to by exposure?
I think it would depend on the severity of the person's allergy, but I can tell you that the poor, long-suffering man I married was desperately allergic to dogs and cats when he married me, and he now is hardly allergic at all to dogs after constant exposure. He is still quite allergic to cats, however.
Very interesting. So you got to find out the name of that cat, or just forget it on cats, right?
I can find out for you, though. We can post it someplace.
All right, that'd be good to know.
Sure.
Well, let's talk about bathing dogs, since you say that is one of the solutions, or at least one of the things that, someone with allergies, or someone who has people with allergies coming to their home, can address. Is there a limit as to, or a recommendation as to how often a dog should or should not be bathed?
Well, it's going to depend a little bit on some certain circumstances, but a couple of things to keep in mind. Dogs that are shown, those beautiful show dogs you see at the Westminster Kennel Club dog show and things, are bathed extremely frequently, sometimes as often as every day. And those dogs have stunning, beautiful hair and are obviously the pictures of good health. So in the olden days, they used to tell us only bathe your dog once or twice a year. Times have really changed.
Yeah, of course, we only used to take baths once a week ourselves back in
exactly.
the 50s, right?
Yep. And the other nice thing is that the grooming industry has really responded to how people are treating their animals more as family members than as pets now. And the industry now has a wide array of fabulous products available that are very mild, very gentle to the animal's coat and skin, and they can be used with great frequency without any irritation or dryness.
So how does one determine when it's time for a bath?
My rule of thumb is if the dog isn't pleasing to be near or to touch, it's time for a bath.
Gotcha. Okay. Now let's talk about when it's time to get your dog clipped. And again, that really is breed specific, isn't it?
Pretty much, yep.
Okay. So some dogs' fur, hair, whatever we want to call it, doesn't really grow very much, right? The short-haired dogs?
That's true. Short-haired dogs might never need to have a haircut their entire lives. However, they could benefit from bathing, de-shedding, having their nails trimmed, their ears cleaned, and just a good all-over professional scrubbing.
And what about that expressing of the anal glands, which
I
try to convince my dog that she's going to the spa, although, of course, that's not what happens when we go to the spa, but...
You're opening all kinds of hot topics today. Okay. Back in the olden days when I learned how to groom, they had us express every single dog's anal sacs. They're actually sacs, not glands. The more modern belief is that doing that regularly with no necessary reason can actually cause some damage to the muscular structure around the very delicate tissue there.
So how do you determine if it is actually either necessary or recommended in a given dog?
Okay. Generally, dogs that are going to have a problem with it tend to be small breeds. And from what I understand, the reason is that in a normal, healthy animal, if the dog has normal stool, the bulk of that stool will help express the anal sacs every time the dog goes to the bathroom. Now, if a dog is fed very soft food, food without much fiber, that's when you can get into some problems. So it's a size-specific problem generally, although sometimes large dogs have problems, but it also is a reflection on the pet's diet in many cases. So if a dog does tend to have problems with that, sometimes adding some fiber to their diet will solve the problem.
And would you recommend doing that with pet food or giving them some the kind of fiber that we might be interested in?
Well, I'd want to chat with my vet, but a couple of solutions that I know have worked for people is to add just some fiber cereal a little bit, maybe a tablespoon a day, to the pet's diet. And other times people will serve canned pumpkin, not pumpkin pie filling, but just plain canned pumpkin, which is very high in fiber, maybe a teaspoon or two in the dog's food, and that increases the fiber in their diet, and they tend to love it.
I was going to say, I bet they love it.
Yep.
I love it, so.
Yep.
Why wouldn't they? Let's talk about the kind of care that people should practice at home with their dogs, just as a general rule. Brushing. Do all dogs need to be brushed? If so, with what? How often?
Okay. I can guess that there's hundreds of dogs in this country that have never had a brush on them in their entire lives, and they live to be rich, healthy, ripe, old ages. However, if you want your dog to smell better, look better, feel better, and not have tangles, brushing is a really dandy idea.
You have to start when they're young in order for them to acclimate to this process? Or
not a bad plan at all. Always with puppies, if you, you know, make it kind of fun and make it not scary, you can teach them how to do just all kinds of things, including enjoying being groomed.
But it's never too late, right?
Oh, I don't think so. No, think of all the dogs that are rescued that have never had a brush on them that learn to go to the spa and have a wonderful time.
Okay, so should we be brushing them or combing them or both?
Well, it's going to depend on your breed. I would say for lots of the popular breeds like Cocker Spaniels and Shih Tzus and Lhasa Apso and things, my favorite recommendation is a good curved slicker brush. When I say curved, I mean the back of the brush is curved. And a slicker brush is a brush that has short teeth that are bent.
Okay.
Those are excellent at removing dead undercoat and tangles.
And they should be metal,
Be metal, yep. And after a good brushing, following the brushing with a combing. And the biggest mistake that most pet owners make is they brush over the top of the pet and they think they've done a wonderful job, while meanwhile against the skin, tangles are forming. So people bring their pet into the groomer and they say, I brush every day. And they might mean it just as completely as they can, but there is this very meta dog that has to be shaved. And it's a big problem because then people are, they feel hurt. They feel like they've done their part and their pet still had to be shaved, and it's a lot of misunderstanding there.
Not to mention how the pet looks shaved. Not so good.
Well, if you put a really big bow on them, sometimes you can pull that look off.
And plus, don't they get cold? I mean, you live in where? Rural Maine, right?
Rural Maine. Well, my theory on this is that most spoiled little lap dogs that do have to get shaved for whatever reason don't spend a whole lot of time outdoors anyway. They're running out to do their business and running right back into the wood stove, so it's all good.
There you go. Any difference between large dogs, small dogs when it comes to grooming, or is it really about their hair, fur, hair?
Mostly
fur.
About their hair or fur.
I don't know what to call it now. I'm getting skitsy here.
I know. I'm
hair,
sorry
fur.
You started. Some big dogs have short hair and some big dogs have long hair, so it's really hard to say. It's really a breed-specific kind of thing.
Now, what about the length of the hair? For instance, Lulu is a Peek-a-Poo, which is Pekingese poodle mix. Basically, she's a little mutt. And unchecked, her hair grows pretty long. And then, of course, because I am not the most fastidious pet owner, and I don't brush her every day. I'm not even sure I brush her once a week, but I mean, I'm admitting this publicly. That's terrible. But I'm making all the people who are listening feel a little better about their own habits, I'm sure. In any case, you know, we like to keep it at a length that's manageable in that she is a rough-and-tumble girl, and she goes up on our hillside and brings back all sorts of little sticky things from the hillside, and, you know, all kinds of little pieces of nature come back in her coat. So we keep it fairly short, but then I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm not doing justice to her breed.
Does she look cute?
Always.
That's all you need to know.
Doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, I think it's one nice thing about having pets is that if you purchase a pet that has, by nature, a very long coat, and then you realize that particular look doesn't fit with your lifestyle, just have it get trimmed. As long as it's comfortable for the pet and easy maintenance for you and there's, you know, no discomfort to the animal, then it's all good.
Well, and the truth is it's healthier for them if they're going to be getting matted. You know, if you're not going to groom them often enough or brush them often enough to keep the mats away, then you're better off with shorter coat, right?
Absolutely. And while we're on that topic, I'd like to make one point. A lot of people don't get their pets groomed in the winter thinking they need all that insulation. However, what's important to know is that a matted coat does not insulate the pet against cold. The way that the coat keeps the animal warm is the animal will fluff it up with these little teeny muscles around each hair follicle, trap air against their body, and that's the insulating factor. Now, if the pet's coat is matted, then it retains moisture, and they can't fluff it properly, and that pet actually can get more chilled with a matted coat. So keeping the coat in good shape is really important, even in the winter months.
What are the other dangers of having mats in a dog's coat?
Well, a mat is most breeds have an undercoat and an exterior coat, like guard hairs, they call it. And what happens normally with a mat is the undercoat, as it sheds out, gets stuck in those guard hairs, and it forms almost like a webbing. If the matting is very tight, it can pull on the skin to the point that it can actually impede circulation. Sometimes in very abused dogs, we'll see little legs that are matted to the point that the dog can't even bend their joints. And so not only can you have some circulatory problems, but also if it gets moist under there, you can create all kinds of room for bacteria and fungus to grow.
So they get infections under there?
They can get infections under there. And if flies get in there, sometimes dogs even get maggots.
Not a pleasant thought.
Not a pleasant thought. Let's get right off of that topic.
Absolutely. Let's talk about fleas and flea control in certain parts of the country. I know that's a real issue, probably less so in the winter than the summer. Am I right?
Depending on where you live.
Okay.
Yep.
Good point. I'm talking to you from California. You're in Maine.
I'm
very
in
different
Maine.
Climates.
We don't have as bad of a flea problem here, although some people still struggle with them.
So what do you recommend for flea control? And do you recommend prophylactic methods where you can do things to avoid having the problem in the first place?
Yep. I can tell you from experience that as a newer groomer 20-something years ago, almost every dog I did had fleas. And in the very recent future, Frontline and Advantage were invented, which are topical applications that the flea still has to bite the dog, but then the flea will die and the flea's life cycle is cut short. Since the advent of those two products particularly, I rarely see a flea dog anymore. Now, granted, groomers in other parts of the country still are seeing some, but the invention of those products has made an enormous difference in the comfort and well-being of our pets.
I can attest to that as a pet owner. Going back, I'll say, about 15, 18 years, we had a dog, a Shih Tzu Poodle Terrier mix, similar size and similar coat to what Lulu has now. And he had a perpetual flea problem. Nothing we could do would get that under control for very long. I mean, we'd seem to have it under control, and then, boom, the next season would come, and it would be out of control again. And I'd be there with a little flea comb and dipping it in water so the fleas would die. And that was in the pre-Advantage days or pre-Frontline days. And now with Lulu and her predecessor in the family, Farfel, no fleas.
Isn't that wonderful?
None at all. It's terrific.
Yeah, it's a gift. It's amazing. And fleas are very difficult to eradicate once you've got them. But those two products have made just a huge difference, and I know in my life as a pet groomer and as a pet owner.
And not just on your dog, but in your rugs, which is to say on your ankles.
Yes. Generally,
everywhere.
If you have fleas on your pet, they are in the pet's environment, which means your house.
And what about ticks? Ticks are a big problem where I live. We have a method of getting rid of them now that is so simple, and I doubt that it's even trademarked. It's a little spoon with a slit in it, a little plastic, tiny little plastic spoon, almost the size, well, I suppose you can get it in different sizes, but almost like a half of a teaspoon measuring spoon.
Yes.
With a little slit, and you literally just scoop the flea, tick right out.
Pretty neat.
Pretty neat. Is that the kind of thing you recommend?
Yep, those are great if you can get them. Otherwise, you can just grab the things with your fingers and yank them out. But that is a nice, safe, sanitary way to get rid of a tick.
We do have one other thing that we do sometimes when they're big is we get them. I don't know where I heard this or read this or if my husband made it up, but we literally, we'll touch the top of the tick and kind of rotate our finger around and around and around. And the tick, I'm told, correct me if I'm wrong, actually gets a little bit dizzy or disoriented and kind of, for that moment, just sort of lets go.
Huh, I've never heard that one.
How's that? And then it's easier to get them out.
I've never heard that one, I have to admit. I'm sorry.
Give it a try sometime. Do you see very many ticks?
We do. This year hasn't been too bad in Maine, but we have a large white-tailed deer population, so we have a lot of ticks that carry Lyme disease, which is a little bit scary.
A little bit more serious.
Yeah.
What else? How often should we have our pets professionally groomed?
Well, that is a really good thing if you can have a pet groomer that you feel comfortable with and that you trust and you can build a relationship with them, you can work out a schedule that's going to be best for your individual pet. So somebody with a Doberman that they love that sleeps in their bed and they want it to smell nice and not shed too much might have to go in every 6 or 8 weeks, whereas somebody with a poodle that's got a really lot of hair might need to go in every 3 to 4 weeks. We have some customers that come in every week to see us.
Okay. We began talking about brushing and how important it is a little earlier on, but I forgot to ask you, or I had yet to ask you, about techniques for helping the dog be more comfortable, stay in one place, and cooperate for the brushing, maybe even learn to love it.
Okay, I can help with that. One neat trick is if people can put their dog up on an elevated surface. A lot of people try to hold the dog in their lap or kneel on the floor with the pet, and that gives the dog a lot of wiggle room, and they think it's kind of playtime. So what I recommend to a lot of pet owners is if they have even like the surface of their washing machine is a good height for a lot of people, mm-hmm. just buy a little no-skid mat from Walmart, like a bathtub mat, and put that there. I keep a little tool caddy with a brush and comb and some little grooming tools right there. And if you even spend 10 minutes a week, which if you think about it isn't too darn much.
We should be able to spare that.
You could probably spare that. Put the pet up on the machine. You want to make sure they can't fall off. Keep maybe a little collar and leash on so they're not going to be in any danger and hang on to that. And maybe have some treats on hand. And as you brush, give a little treat, do a little brushing, give a little treat. Keep it short at first. Put the puppy down, give it a big smooch, tell it, yay, this is great. And you can build up the time from 30 seconds to 10 minutes, and you should be able to keep your pet in good shape.
Sounds like great advice. Should we brush them before or after we bathe them at home?
Well, kind of personal preference. I tend to do it after, just because I like working on nice, clean, shiny, sweet-smelling hair more than I like working on dirty hair.
Okay. And what about letting them dry au naturel versus using a hair dryer at home?
Depending on your pet's coat. Poodle-type coats, poodles and Bichon Frise and things, if you let them air dry, they're going to curl right up really tight and look very crimpy, which is kind of a cute look, but it's not the look you generally see in pictures. So lots of reasons. One of the reasons that most pets look so fabulous when they leave the grooming shop isn't all just the skill of the haircut. It's the technique of the brushing and drying after the bath. And a lot of that beautiful, fluffy look that you see is because of really good drying technique.
And is a home hair dryer good enough, or do you need something more powerful?
You could, depending on your breed, if you've got a full-coated Old English Sheepdog and a little teeny home hair dryer, you'll spend about 6 weeks getting it dry. Which
yeah, I was going to say, if you've got an Old English Sheepdog, you're nuts if you're trying to do this at home.
but for a little smaller to medium-sized dog, you can dry them with a handheld dryer. You do need to be careful not to use hot, you know, the hot setting. You want it on warm and never let it get so warm that it's uncomfortable on your skin, because dogs are certainly sensitive to heat and you don't want to irritate their skin.
Great. Who knew there was this much to discuss about
grooming? Who knew?
Well, you are absolutely terrific. I want to let people know once again your website, because there are lots of articles there and lots of information. And that is darylconnor.com, DarylConnor.com. And I'll bet you wouldn't mind if some of my listeners wrote to you.
I would be delighted if they wrote to me.
Excellent. Daryl, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. This has been fun, and I love your podcast.
Thank you so much. Tell all your customers.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to be putting a link to you on my website, too.
Excellent. Take care.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Good Dog Podcast. Now, if you liked what you just heard, go out, brush your dog, bathe your dog, and then take a photograph of your dog. You do know, I haven't mentioned this in a while, that Good Dog is the only podcast with an embedded audio channel that only dogs can hear. Also, the one other thing I wanted to mention is that I've been getting great emails from Good Dog listeners lately, making recommendations on people to interview or topics to cover. So please keep those suggestions coming. Once again, just send an email to me, Joanne Green. Send it to gooddog@smarterpodcasts.com.